Blog Talk Radio.
From the far reaches of the known universe, we are proud to present Brother Harold Muhammad, soldier, scientist, scholar. Blog Talk Radio's finest. Not so mad science on Black Hole Radio. Black Hole Radio. Black Hole Radio. Black Hole Radio.
Assalamu alaikum, and welcome to tonight's edition of Not So Mad Science here on the Black Hole Radio Network. Once again, and as always, coming to you live from the city of Detroit. Just because Berry Gordy took Motown to L.A. does not mean Detroit has lost its soul. We're going to revisit tonight a previous subject because I think it is essential that we keep it on our mind. So to that end, here we have the science to exterminate blacks.
A think tank in the UK says too many kids are what's making the planet worse.
In many black communities, for every child actually born, three others are aborted, more than double the rate among whites.
Some say abortion is the number one killer in the black community.
African Americans here in this country are the only ethnic group in any place on the globe that's not replacing themselves. This is genocide.
Hillary Clinton received the Margaret Sanger Award. This is a woman who started an organization called Planned Parenthood, and that woman called black people human weeds.
An organization whose founder believed in eugenics.
The goal, to rid the country of the feeble-minded, defective.
States in the United States refusing to compensate victims who were forcibly sterilized because they were deemed unfit to reproduce.
If they could keep certain segments of the population from reproducing, that all the world's problems would disappear. And so
we have spent the past few weeks calling and emailing politicians in California, and the silence has been astonishing.
Welcome to this talk. It's called The Science Agenda to Exterminate Blacks. This is a fact-based presentation, but it is not politically correct in the status quo halls of science and medicine because they don't want this talked about. And they especially don't want it talked about by a white scientist. And I'll give you a little bit of information about my background soon so you understand where I'm coming from and why I'm taking the steps to go public with this information. The truth is there is a concerted, organized, long-standing effort to eliminate African Americans from the human gene pool. Not just African Americans, by the way, but Africans. This is happening right now. You are being subjected to it. It's happening through multiple vectors of science, medicine, and food that I will detail here in this talk, and it's all being done covertly. So almost no one is aware of this. The entire mainstream media refuses to acknowledge this. The scientific community will say that none of this is true. And yet, if you look at the facts that I'm going to share with you and the history that's undeniable, you will see there is a concerted, organized effort to eliminate blacks, i.e. African Americans. I'm going to use those terms interchangeably just for brevity here. But there is an effort to eliminate those people from the human gene pool. My background, just so you know, my name is Mike Adams. I'm known as the Health Ranger. I am a lab science director. I founded and built a world-class analytical laboratory from scratch. It is ISO accredited. It's recognized around the world for analytical science of heavy metals and food contamination, environmental contamination, and so on. We've done volunteer work, testing over 600 samples of the U.S. water supply. And we've also volunteered our lab efforts to Native American tribes who have been impacted by the EPA's poisoning of their rivers. So, by the way, it's not just blacks that are trying to be eliminated by the status quo. It's also Native Americans and other minority groups that are routinely targeted by not just the EPA, but other groups that we'll talk about here. I do want you to know that because I am an outspoken science whistleblower, that I am maliciously attacked, defamed, lied about, I am targeted for intimidation tactics. They try to silence my words. They try to make sure that you can't hear this talk. I've been death threatened. I've been stalked. I have to live a lifestyle of extreme secrecy. And I'm armed 24/7, including right now. And this is what it takes in our world today to tell the truth about science and medicine, especially when you are uncovering a mass agenda of genocide and eugenics, which is very prevalent through our systems of science and medicine today. So I do want all of you to know, all of you who are watching, if you're sharing this with your friends and colleagues, I do want you to know that I'm putting myself at risk to say these things, especially as a credible scientist of an accredited laboratory facility, which has everything to do with the heavy metals poisoning that we're going to talk about. They absolutely don't want this information getting out. So let's start with something that we can all easily agree upon because it has been in the news everywhere, and that is the heavy metals poisoning of the predominantly black communities of Flint, Michigan. So no one says that's a conspiracy theory, right? The water supply for millions of citizens in that region, who again were predominantly black, was allowed to be deliberately poisoned with lead, a toxic heavy metal that causes bone disorders, but more importantly, it causes a kind of brain lobotomy. It causes loss of cognitive function. It reduces IQs. It causes heart problems and many other problems. This was deliberately allowed to poison the water supply of Flint, Michigan, knowing that that water supply served minority communities. And in fact, this was so deliberate and it was so criminal that the Attorney General of Michigan has so far filed at least 43 criminal charges against predominantly scientists and bureaucrats who ran teams of scientists, water quality experts, and so on, many of whom have been charged with felony crimes. Now, water quality officials in Flint, Michigan were tasked with testing the water and making sure that it was, clean or safe to drink. And yet, every time they showed lead in the water, they covered it up. They ditched that sample, they deleted it from the spreadsheet, they replaced it with another sample from some other source. They committed massive scientific fraud, and they did this deliberately to cover up the fact that the African-American population of Flint, Michigan, or Detroit, greater Detroit, was being systematically poisoned. And this was going on year after year. And it could be going on now in other cities across the country. What we have found in our testing is that about 6.9% of the municipal water in America is poisoned with heavy metals. We've published those numbers at naturalsciencejournal.org in a science paper that shows you the actual data. It turns out that those areas that are most affected by these toxic heavy metals tend to be those with a predominantly larger population of African Americans. So it's the minority communities that are being impacted more so than, let's say, rich white communities. Getting back to the Flint, Michigan situation, we know that they knew about this and they failed to tell people. They covered it up and they allowed it to continue. They deliberately allowed millions of children and adults, senior citizens, who were predominantly black, to be poisoned with this toxic heavy metal. Would that have happened in a rich California white community? I doubt it. I doubt it. In 2007, Chicago convened a breast cancer task force to try to figure out why so many black men and women were dying of cancer. For black women, it's mostly breast cancer. For black men, it's mostly prostate cancer. And across the cancer industry, every doctor will tell you that cancers are known to be far more severe in African American patients than, let's say, Caucasian patients. But they don't understand why. And I'll tell you why. It's a very simple reason. It has everything to do with melanin in the skin. If you have darker skin pigmentation, because your ancestors came from a region closer to the equator, where sun exposure is more intense. And so the melanin in the skin is designed to block UV radiation. It's a built-in sunscreen. It's actually a feature You know, black skin is a feature. It's a survival mechanism of those whose ancestors lived near the equator. But it blocks vitamin D production at the same time. You see? Because the ancestors, all of our ancestors, were outdoors people. They spent their time outdoors. They didn't live in offices. They didn't work indoors all day long. So they had too much sun. And so the dark skin pigmentation blocked the excessive sun, and it protected them from UV radiation. Well, today, we all live indoors, don't we, for the most part? Indoor lifestyles, office jobs, even people who work in hospitals are working indoors. And when black people work indoors or live indoors, they become sunlight deficient, especially because of the melanin in their skin. So now that same feature of their skin that blocked excessive sun radiation in, let's say, Africa, now in New Jersey or New York, it's a detriment because it's causing African-American populations to become deficient in vitamin D. And this is what's happening in Chicago and Detroit, and especially the more northern latitudes of northern United States, Canada, and so on. Black men in the UK have very high rates of prostate cancer, and when they get diagnosed with prostate cancer, the prognosis is less positive than, let's say, a white person with prostate cancer. The cancers are more aggressive. They're more deadly. The answer is lack of vitamin D. And yet in 2007, the Chicago Breast Cancer Task Force convened, I think, over 100 doctors and nurses to try to have a powwow, a team effort to try to figure out why is cancer worse in black people in Chicago. And wouldn't you know it, after spending days or even weeks on this project, they couldn't come up with the truth. The truth that people with dark skin are sunlight deficient, they're vitamin D deficient, and that's why the cancer is more aggressive, because vitamin D halts cancer. And vitamin D can be purchased for a nickel a day. Every black person in Chicago, in Detroit, in New York, in the UK could prevent cancer. About 4 out of 5 cancers, by the way, with nothing but vitamin D. And yet the cancer industry won't tell them that. So here's a case where you have a disease that is disproportionately more aggressive in blacks versus whites. And white people, they absorb sunlight more efficiently when they're outdoors, so they need less time in the sun to generate the same amount of vitamin D as a black person who needs more time in the sun. And yet nobody is telling African Americans this simple truth. Nobody. This information is being denied the black community in America. And it's just, again, a very small part of the overall vector that I'm going to be continuing to reveal here that is an effort to exterminate blacks. Now let's talk about the abortion industry. I'm not going to download politics on you about whether you think abortion should be legal or illegal, or illegal in the third trimester and legal in the other two, or whatever. That's your deal. That's another day, another topic. My point is that abortion ends a life, and it ends certainly a potential life. And I say abortion ends a living human baby. Now, abortion centers are deliberately set up where? Predominantly black communities. Abortion messaging and abortion marketing is more aggressive toward black communities than it is white communities or non-black communities. The Planned Parenthood / abortion industry needs a steady supply of black women getting pregnant and wanting to terminate those pregnancies in order for them to be able to harvest tissue and organs from partial birth abortions, which are almost all black babies. Now, a partial birth abortion, in case you're not familiar with this, is when there's a baby that could be born and could be brought into this world, is capable of breathing and living. It's conscious. It has memories. It has sensory complexity. It has consciousness. It has feelings. And it's partially born. Let's say just the head is born. And then at that moment, the abortion center murders that baby. And then they harvest the organs. They will harvest the brain stem. They will harvest the lungs. They will harvest the kidneys. They will harvest the heart. And they You know what they do with those tissues? Well, we're told they use them for medical research. It turns out most of those tissues are sold to vaccine manufacturers. And they use those tissues to grow biomass for vaccines that are then injected into other children. And this is openly admitted by the vaccine industry and the CDC. And on my website, Natural News, we've covered, we have shown screenshots of the ingredients lists of these vaccines, such as chickenpox vaccine, varicella, uses human fetal tissue. And that human fetal tissue comes predominantly from black babies. So it's not just that the abortion centers are set up in predominantly black communities to reduce the population numbers of black children and future black adults, but it's also that those black children are having their organs harvested in order to make vaccines that are injected into other babies. There is a kind of racial medical cannibalism that is taking place in America today, and it combines the evil of the Planned Parenthood abortion industry and the vaccine industry, combines all that with an overlay of eugenics and genocide. And by the way, if you don't think that abortion is tied to a history of eugenics and genocide, you need to read the history of Margaret Sanger, one of the key founders of Planned Parenthood, who called black people human weeds, and she said that it's better to kill black babies in the womb so that they don't become adults. And I'm paraphrasing that. I don't know the exact quote, but it's something along those lines. She saw abortion as a key vector of exterminating the black population in our world, and that goal is being carried out today. And by the way, she was so effective with this narrative and with this obscene, twisted logic of genocide that the Nazis borrowed her narrative and her mindset and said, oh, that sounds like a good idea, let's apply it to the Jews. So Adolf Hitler and the Third Reich, their Holocaust against the Jews was modeled after the Planned Parenthood founder Margaret Sanger eugenics genocide model that continues today in America. There is a Holocaust in America today, and it's a Holocaust that specifically targets black Americans. And yet, there is virtually no outcry. Now, in case you're having difficulty believing any of this, let's go to the news. Let's go to what's being widely reported about medical experiments targeting African babies. All right? And you can find the article and the sources for this on naturalnews.com. Officials of Pfizer, a major drug company and vaccine manufacturer, are under arrest in Nigeria. And I'm going to read you a little bit here, and I apologize for the pronunciation here, but Judge Shehu Atiku in the city of Kano said that the Nigerian Pfizer head, Ngozi Edozien, and senior company officials from Pfizer, Lare Bale and Segun Donguro, failed to appear in court in compliance with a court order that's seeking a $2.6 billion fine from Pfizer, charging that the company illegally tested an experimental antibiotic known as Trovan on children in Kano during a meningitis outbreak in 1996. So you see, they use disease to test new drugs. And by the way, you'll find out that it's the industry is spreading the disease in order to push the vaccines, and they always use Africans for their experiments. It's across the board. Well, I'll give you more examples. This illegal experiment on African children led to the deaths of 11 children, and dozens of other children experienced severe harm. Now, that shouldn't surprise anyone because it rings true with the history of the Tuskegee syphilis experiments. Those experiments conducted in the United States with the approval of U.S. health authorities and government authorities was begun in 1932, and there were over 600 volunteers who were exploited by the medical system. These were black men predominantly. They were exploited by the system. They were told they were going to receive phenomenal care, that they were going to get extra money, that they were going to be treated well. Instead, they were denied treatment so that the medical establishment, again, these are scientists, so that they could observe the progression of this disease as black men suffered and died. And this wasn't in Africa. This was on U.S. soil. This was in the 1930s. And this is one where they got caught, because there have been dozens of other examples of this kind of medical experimentation in the United States, which usually targets black people, black prisoners in particular. And we could talk about the prison industry and how it's a business. That's another topic. But once they get people into that prison system, they then use them for medical experiments, and they have done so routinely throughout American history. And if you think that the American government has gone out of its way to protect blacks in America, you need to go back and reread your history. The FBI wrote a letter encouraging Martin Luther King Jr. to commit suicide. The FBI ran violent raids on black civil rights groups throughout the 1960s and 70s. And to this day, the FBI runs domestic terrorism operations that they call sting operations, where the FBI sets up the plan, the FBI gets the fake bombs, the FBI acquires the vehicle, whatever the agenda calls for, they'll go after you. And in science and medicine, they're going after you right now. So let's continue. Let me give you more evidence, because I want you to judge this on the evidence. Now, and just as a quick side note, you notice how the recent Ebola outbreak, well, a couple years ago, happened in Africa. Now, I don't have proof of this, but there are many in the industry of the immunization industry, vaccine industry, holistic medicine industries, who believe that those strains of Ebola were weaponized and were allowed to escape in certain African nations in order to assess the epidemiological impact and to test new drugs, and also as a false flag to push more funding for Ebola vaccines in the United States. And that nurse that was brought to Texas was allowed to come in and was allowed to spread Ebola to another person in Texas, which is what happened, so that they could call for more vaccines. They create a panic. They create the outbreak, and then they push billions of dollars of funding for more vaccines. In Africa, there are groups that provide vaccines to young African women. And these vaccines are often disguised as tetanus shots. And this is done usually in conjunction with UNICEF, you know, the global group, UNICEF, and also Kiwanis International, which is supposed to be, you know, a community group across the United States and elsewhere. They have a project that they've used to give tetanus vaccines to black women in Africa. The name of this project, and I kid you not, I'm not making this up, the name of the project is the Eliminate Project. The Eliminate Project. What are they eliminating? Turns out that various Catholic mission groups that are pro-vaccine and that have been administering these vaccines to young women across Africa sent some of these vaccines to laboratories for analysis of their composition. And there, they were shocked to find that a very high percentage of these vaccines are being laced with covert sterilization chemicals. This is a fact. This is openly admitted. This, in fact, they blew the whistle on this. They went public with it. The U.S. media didn't report this. But outside the U.S., this is widely reported. In fact, we've covered it on Natural News. The Catholic bishops in Kenya, they actually urged the Kenyan Ministry of Health to block vaccines from UNICEF and the World Health Organization, because the World Health Organization approves of these covert sterilization vaccines. Isn't that interesting? Now, where are these vaccines given? Are they given in Boulder, Colorado, which is predominantly white? No. No such covert sterilization chemicals in Boulder, Colorado. Are these vaccines found in Salt Lake City, Utah? Are they trying to eliminate Mormons? No. No such covert sterilization chemicals in Salt Lake City, Utah. Where are they found? They're found in vaccines given to young women in Mexico, Nicaragua, the Philippines, and Africa. So the covert sterilization chemicals just happen to show up in countries with either black people or brown people. And these vaccines are all approved by the World Health Organization and other such groups that operate at the global level. Isn't that interesting? Do you think that's coincidence? Because I challenge you. If you think that's coincidence, you're not connecting the dots. A few years ago in the United States, a top scientist for the CDC, Centers for Disease Control, the vaccine pushing group in the government, top scientist named Dr. William Thompson, went public through a legal firm, posted an admission of guilt, said that he and his colleagues, while working at the CDC, had taken part in a massive scientific fraud, a cover-up, where they found a 340% higher risk of autism in young African-American boys under the age of 3 who were given these vaccines versus non-black children. A 340% increased risk of autism. Now, those of you who are watching this, if you're part of the black community, you know autism is an epidemic across black communities in America today, right? You know that. How many young, and they're mostly boys, aren't they? Mostly boys. How many young black boys have had their brains permanently damaged by the vaccine industry with the knowledge of the CDC, the knowledge that they are harming disproportionately black children, but not so many white children? Now, there are white children who are autistic, but the numbers for black children are disproportionately much higher, 340% higher. Now, the CDC knew about this. They had this information. They knew the results, and they chose to cover it up. And one of their scientists went public with it, blew the whistle. Now, the entire mainstream media in America, NPR, Washington Post, New York Times, CNN, everybody, they all covered it up. They all blacklisted the news. They decided not to report this altogether, which shows you, by the way, that they have no journalism. They are fake news. They don't do real investigations. They chose not to cover this. Actually, I happen to know they were ordered not to cover this. The CDC issues orders to the media, by the way. They order the media when to spread panic about outbreaks. They order the media when to not say something about dangers of vaccines. The CDC is a criminal operation. And just as a quick side note, a Democrat, Robert F. Kennedy Jr., has now called for the extradition of a CDC vaccine science fraud artist who fled the country with millions of dollars in taxpayer money and has been hiding out in Europe. And his name is Paul Thorsen. And he worked with the CDC to fabricate fake vaccine safety studies. And he's a fugitive from justice. The CDC is a criminal organization. So they covered this up, knowing that it damaged black babies 340% more than white babies. Are you still telling me this is all coincidence? Really? What causes the damage in black children? Turns out that there are genetic differences between babies who come from predominantly African ancestry versus those of more European ancestry, and that those genetic differences offer various expressions of predisposition to clearing mercury from your body. And so many of these black babies, they can't clear mercury out as quickly as the white babies. And when they're all injected with mercury, which is what happens because thimerosal is a mercury preservative still used in vaccines given to pregnant women in America and given to children in America, the white babies can clear out the mercury very quickly and they suffer little or no damage most of the time. The black babies, the mercury continues to circulate in their bodies and brains for days or weeks, sometimes months. And they can be permanently harmed and brain damaged, and they can be made autistic, and it is happening every day in America. And the vaccine industry went to Congress several years ago and got absolute legal immunity granted to their entire industry for any vaccine listed on the childhood immunization schedule. So if you're a black mother, a black father, your child, perfectly healthy, normal, has a great future, and that child, let's say they're 2 years old, you take them in to get vaccinated because the doctor told you to vaccinate your children, right? You get that child vaccinated, sometimes 48 hours later, boom, that child's brain damaged for life, autistic for life. And you can't sue the manufacturer for their faulty product because Congress conspired with the vaccine companies to grant them all legal immunity. You can't even take your case to court. The U.S. Supreme Court already ruled on that. You can't take your case to a regular court. You have to go to a secret vaccine court run by the vaccine industry that denies almost all claims. And even then, by the way, even though they deny almost all claims, the vaccine court has paid out over $3 billion to victims of vaccine damage that were proven to have been damaged by vaccines. If the truth about this came out, and if families of autistic children, especially in the black community, were able to really take their cases to court and seek justice through the legal system, it would bankrupt the entire pharmaceutical industry, which is what should happen, by the way. The vaccine industry specifically allows damage to happen to black babies. And that's if they survive abortion. You know how hard it is to be conceived as a black child and make it through gestation and be born alive and not be murdered, and then to make it through the vaccines, and then to make it through the psychiatric medicine and everything else? It's incredibly difficult just to survive. And that is on purpose, because the science and medical establishments are working deliberately to exterminate black people from this planet, to wipe you out from human civilization. They're doing it. It's happening right now. Now, continuing with the vaccine agenda to exterminate blacks from the world, you need to know something about polio and polio vaccines. There are two ways you can get polio. One is to catch it from a wild circulating polio virus. Second way is to get it from a polio vaccine. It's a well-known phenomenon. It's called vaccine-induced polio. Now, when they inject children with polio, or they do nasal vaccines or other forms of vaccines, not all the vaccines are fully attenuated, which means weakened. They're not all fully weakened. Some of them have live viruses. So sometimes when they're giving vaccines to children in large numbers, some small percentage of those children are going to be infected with the disease, with polio. It's called vaccine-induced polio. Now, recently, 355 children were vaccinated in Syria, Middle Eastern country, right? 355,000 children vaccinated against polio. Why were they vaccinated? Because there was a polio outbreak. What caused the polio outbreak? Polio vaccine. This was a vaccine-induced polio outbreak that was then treated with more vaccines. Now, 355,000 children were then injected. If 1 out of 1,000 children it catches polio from a polio vaccine, then didn't they just create 355 more children with polio? Yes, they did. And that will be reported as an outbreak, and someone will call for the World Health Organization or UNICEF to come in and vaccinate, you know, 1 million children, whatever it takes. You see, the vaccines are the continuation of the disease that they claim to stop. Now, if you understand epidemiology, statistics, science, and medicine, it is true that in a population, let's say you have 1 million children, and let's say polio is endemic, let's say half the children in the country have polio. In that case, because the infection rate is so high, a polio vaccine can drastically bring down that infection rate and save far more lives than it would terminate because the rate of infection is so high. But that same vaccine, when the rate of infection is very low, if you give that vaccine to large numbers of children, hundreds of thousands or millions, you will create more disease than you halt. The same vaccine. It all has to do with how many children are currently infected versus how many you're actually vaccinating. If you vaccinate a lot of children who are not infected, you're going to cause infections, you're going to cause outbreaks. And this is what is used in Africa. This is what is used across the world to keep the disease process going, so they can keep manufacturing vaccines, which are, remember, made from aborted black babies. We're talking human fetal cell tissue. They take it from the babies. They take it from the abortions. Planned Parenthood sells it to these companies. And they put it in large vats, and they inoculate it with viral strains, and they grow and fester a large amount of biomass of disease material. And then they homogenize that with tissue homogenizers. They filter that. They put it into vaccine vials with other ingredients that are toxic, like aluminum or squalene or mercury, and then they inject that into other kids. We are living in a world, people, wake up and understand this. We are living in a world where they are murdering and grinding up black babies to feed them to other babies. This is like the Matrix. This is medical cannibalism. It's actually happening every day. Many of these vaccines are made from human fetal tissue that's harvested from aborted black babies. And you know what? A lot of the doctors don't even know it. A lot of the pharmacists don't even know it because they've never read the ingredients of a vaccine. They don't even know. All you got to do is go to the CDC, read the ingredients, FDA website. It's all right there. It's all out in the open. But no one wants to believe it because it's too horrifying. It's too evil. A recent study funded by the CDC, literally run by the CDC, using CDC money and CDC scientists, found that vaccines cause spontaneous abortions. So they're pushing vaccines on the pregnant women, right? You've heard that recently? All pregnant women are encouraged to go out and get multiple vaccines, which never was taught in medicine until the last 20 years. Before that, doctors were told, no, you never vaccinate a pregnant woman. That could harm the child, you know, the unborn baby. Now they're like, oh, you're pregnant? Get shot up with vaccines. Take antidepressant drugs. Take chemotherapy. Just poison the crap out of your body. Don't worry. It doesn't affect the baby. But it does. Because these medical liars are genocidal, homicidal maniacs. They're deceiving you. They're lying to you. They know that vaccines cause spontaneous abortions. It's just been admitted by the CDC. Now, we've covered this study on naturalnews.com. I want you to go there, and I want you to read it, and I want you to, we link directly to the journal, and I think the journal is Vaccines, by the way, where this study was published. You can read it yourself. It's not a conspiracy theory. It's openly admitted by the CDC. Vaccines cause spontaneous abortions. One more population control mechanism. By the way, speaking of population control, let me give you a couple of websites before I get to the last and most shocking point in all of this. We've got three websites that you can check out where you can learn more about this every day. Okay, depopulation.news, genocide.news, and eugenics.news. These are all .news domains. But again, depopulation, genocide, and eugenics, all .news. Go there. There's going to be some overlap of articles there, but your eyes will be opened. You will come to see the truth about what's actually happening. And if you are black or African American and you're listening to this, you need to know the truth about how you are being targeted for extermination. You and your children and your grandchildren and your parents, you are all being targeted for extermination. Now, to some extent, we are all being targeted in different ways because there is a depopulation agenda that wants to reduce the entire global population to about 1 billion people. But it seems from observing the way they're doing this, they sure do want to get rid of black people first. And they're actively doing it. It's happening right now. It's right under your nose. Most people have no clue that it's going on. And you've got Black Lives Matter out there marching for social justice, completely oblivious to everything I've just said. Where is Black Lives Matter talking about the abortion industry or the vaccine industry or the psychiatric medication of young black kids or the autism epidemic or the use of black children for medical experiments? Black Lives Matter doesn't touch any of those things. They might bash some heads at some speech that they don't like. Maybe take down a couple of Nazis or some white supremacists, you know, bash some white hoods out there. They might have a little bit of success at that, but guess what? You're still being exterminated because it's in the food, it's in the medicine. The scientific community is working to exterminate you. Hey, your enemy is not even the Nazis and the white supremacists. It's the scientists. It's the pharmacology evildoers. It's the drug companies. It's the vaccine companies. It's the abortion providers. That's who's killing you. All right, in 1969, New York Times ran an article authored by Gladwyn Hill. That's his name, Gladwyn Hill. He's the author. You can look this up. The article is entitled, "A Sterility Drug in Food is Hinted." The article cited a scientist named Paul Ehrlich, who's a depopulation advocate, as well as the chief science advisor for then-President Richard Nixon. And his name, the science advisor, is, Dr. Lee DuBridge. And he said, quote, listen to this quote very carefully. He said, quote, "Population control should be the prime task of every government." Here's how they were going to accomplish this. This is all in the New York Times in 1969. I've reprinted the article in naturalnews.com. If you want to see this, you can read it for yourself. You can convince yourself. I'm not making this up. This is all on the record. Okay? He said, quote, "The addition of a temporary sterilant to staple foods or to the water supply would be the way to achieve mandatory infertility." Did you catch that? In 1969, they called for secretly inserting sterilization chemicals into the food supply and the water supply to depopulate the planet. It's not a conspiracy theory. It's in the New York Times, 1969. Same year we landed a man on the moon, right? Advanced technology. What do they want to do with it? They want to exterminate blacks with it. Now, notice they called for adding this covert sterilization chemical to the food supply and the water supply. Well, what has happened since then? Lead poisoning in Flint, Michigan. It's a damaging chemical in the water supply, isn't it? It's right out of the playbook from 1969. This is part of the plan. And that's just one time they got caught. What about the tetanus vaccines in Africa that were found to be contaminated with a sterilization chemical? Same thing. They were going to hide it in the food and the water. Now they're putting it in the vaccines. It's all consistent. Oh, and by the way, that chemical that they found in the vaccines is called beta-BCG. Beta-BCG. Let me describe this to you, all right? Beta-BCG causes the female body to have an immune system response that builds antibodies that destroy her own fetus if she gets pregnant. Do you realize that through this chemical that they secretly insert into the vaccines, they can cause a black woman's body to turn against itself and to murder its own baby in absolute violation of natural law and biblical principles and medical morality and everything else? And they were putting this sterilization chemical into these vaccines without the informed consent of the women who were being sterilized. This is evil medicine. This is evil science. This is genocide in the name of vaccines for public safety, right? That's what they tell you. Oh, this is all for public safety? While they're making an African woman's body murder her own baby before it can be born, and they don't tell her about it? That's medicine? That's public safety? That's a holocaust. It's a holocaust against blacks across our planet. Now you see why I have to speak this truth? You see why? Wasn't it Edmund Burke who said, all that's necessary for evil to prevail is that good men do nothing, right? I'm not going to stand here and be silent. I'm not going to stand here and be intimidated. Those people out there, you know, they can slander and they can defame me all they want, all day and night. Call me anything. Fake news, lies, fake accusations. The truth is that you people are genocidal maniacs trying to kill black babies and turn black women against their own babies. You're trying to turn a woman's womb into a murder system through the use of covert sterilization chemicals. That is a scientific and medical fact. And that's why I'm standing here today, to speak this truth, to put it on the record, so that no one can hide from this fact, that this genocide is taking place right now, today. It's not 1932 Tuskegee experiment anymore. It's more advanced now. It's not just one vector killing black people. It's five or six different vectors. It's in the food. It's in the vaccines. It's in the medicine. It's in the psychiatric drugs. Oh, and let's get to the food, because this is the final chapter of this that will absolutely shock you. Now, you're hopefully aware of genetic engineering of the food supply, right? They're called GMOs, or genetically modified organisms. This is an advanced science technique to alter the DNA of food crops in order to build in certain traits and physical properties or even chemical properties that the scientists want to put into the food. Now, I'm going to explain to you how your food is now being weaponized as an extermination vector to eliminate black lives. All right. Now, I'm a food scientist. I'm the author of Food Forensics. It achieved the number one best-selling science book on Amazon.com. I'm the co-author of science papers that have been published in mainstream science journals. I'm not just a casual layperson when it comes to food science. I run a mass spec laboratory that's ISO accredited, validated, audited, inspected, passed many, many tests. Our data can be used in a court of law anywhere around the world. We do food analysis. We can search for complex molecules such as pesticides or elements such as mercury or cadmium. So I run the lab. I am the lab science director. I know a thing or two about food science. Now, what they have invented, when I say they, I'm talking about the genetic engineers, not only have they found a way to put these genetically engineered traits into food crops, they've now found a way to cause food crops to grow RNA fragments that can be specifically targeted like bioweapons to interfere with the physiological processes of targeted species that might eat the food. Now, this technology is called RNA interference technology. It's relatively new compared to GMOs, relatively new. It's being touted now as a technology to eliminate the use of pesticides because what they're saying is they can cause a corn crop to grow RNA fragments that will kill the insects that eat the corn without having to use pesticides like toxic chemicals that overload the insect nervous system and kill it from a nervous system breakdown and so on. This RNA interference technology is a pesticide technology, but it doesn't rely on pesticide chemicals. It relies on RNA fragments in the food. Now, what's disturbing about this is that this technology can be fine-tuned to target a specific race of humans who eat the food. I want you to follow me very carefully on this because most people have never heard of this before. They've never heard of this technology. They don't know it can be targeted by race. Food crops can be engineered right now based on existing technology to cause infertility in black people alone. That technology is a reality. It's widely covered out there in the mainstream media, in the science media. RNA interference technology is widely covered. And they openly talk about how it can be used to target specific physiological processes of certain insect species. They can interfere with DNA repair or protein synthesis in insects. They can interfere with fertility or reproduction. They can interfere with mobility, a nervous system interaction with the musculoskeletal system, or depending on what animal we're talking about, other systems, endoskeleton systems. I ask you, does that technology exist? The answer is yes. It absolutely exists right now. Are they using that technology? I ask you, do a little bit of research, look at the plummeting sperm production in black men. Sperm production is plummeting in black men. Sperm production is precisely the kind of physiological process that can be targeted by RNA interference technology. Now, is that proof that the food crops are being engineered to cause sperm production to plummet in black men? No, it's not proof. But when you connect the dots of all the other things that are being done covertly, this becomes something very likely in the realm of possibility. It would take a lot of advanced testing to find this out. And guess who controls the funding? Guess who controls nearly all the science funding in America today? The federal government. The same government that allows the CDC to cover up the truth about vaccines and black children. The same government that funds Planned Parenthood abortions of black babies. The same government that covers up the EPA-induced contamination of waterways affecting Native Americans and other populations, including the Flint, Michigan, predominantly black population. This government, same government that runs the FBI, that wanted Martin Luther King Jr. to commit suicide. It's the same government. The government is at war with you. If you're black and you're watching this, the government is at war with you, and they want you exterminated, and they control the science funding, which means there will never be money for any genetic science of the food supply to uncover this truth if it were there. It would be covered up like everything else has been covered up this entire time. Just like the Tuskegee experiments covered things up in the 1930s. Nothing has changed, except the technology is more advanced. The covert technology is more covert. The number of vectors through which they can kill you and cause you to have no children, cause you to have spontaneous abortions, the number of vectors is increasing. You are being targeted. And like I said earlier, to some extent, we're all being targeted. But black people are being targeted more than anyone else. So what do we do with all this information? What do we do? Do you take to the streets and bash heads? No. It doesn't get you anywhere. The problem is the consolidation of power in the institutions of science and medicine. The problem is that science has been taken over by globalist agendas and depopulation agendas and government funding. The problem is that we don't have a decentralization of science. The problem is, if you will allow me to even invoke this terminology, the problem is that we are all slaves to science tyranny as it is being operated today. We're all slaves. We're living under a science dictatorship that refuses to tell us the truth and yet targets our brothers and sisters, our children, our grandchildren with extermination agendas through medicine, through food, like everything we've talked about. That's the problem. We need independent science. We need decentralization. We need more labs like my lab that I operate independently. We don't take any government money. That's why I can tell you this truth. You think if I were on the payroll of some big corporation that used government money, do you think I could stand here and tell you this truth? No way. Not a chance. It would yank your funding so fast, cover it up, sweep it under the rug. I can only stand here today because I have no financial ties to the system that's murdering all of you. Nor will I ever have financial ties to that system. I refuse to take money from satanic forces. I refuse to take money from murderous regimes. And that's what the United States government is today. It is a murderous regime, and it has been that way under President Obama, President Bush. It's beyond any single president. It has nothing to do with Trump. It's the bureaucracy, the momentum of genocide that is endemic in the culture of the CDC, in the culture of the FDA, in the culture of the EPA, that is beyond the reach of any one candidate or any one politician. And it has persisted for generations, and it continues to persist. And it will continue to target you and murder you and cause you disease and cause you brain damage and cause your children autism until the day comes that we, the people, decide to stand up and take back our liberty from this murderous regime that commits murder and genocide in the name of science and medicine. And that is what we must do. I don't think it's a goal that can be achieved through violence. And I don't call for violence because that is being inflicted against us in far too many ways. It must start with awareness. And so the only thing I ask of you watching this, listening to this, even if you don't believe every chapter of the talk here, maybe you find some of them hard to believe so far. The only thing I ask of you is share this information. Share this video. Share this talk. Have a public viewing in a church. Maybe you've got a black church somewhere. Invite your congregation to watch this if you dare. If you want to know the truth about this from a scientist, an independent scientist who sees what's happening and refuses to be silent and refuses to be exploited by the evil that exists in our world, the murderous evil in the name of science, stealing life away from black families and black mothers and pursuing a goal of global extermination through medicine and science. We cannot stand for it. We must change our future together. And we're not going to do that, by the way, by fighting with each other over skin color or race. Do not let the system divide us, because the system is actually murdering us, but they're trying to keep us distracted. In the meantime, they want black and white to fight against each other in the streets, don't they? You better believe they do. They want you to not trust each other, because they are the murderers. They, the system, they're murdering us all to one extent or another, but they want us to be too busy bashing each other over the head with baseball bats to pay attention to the real murder that's taking place on the bigger scale, the global scale of murder and genocide. Don't allow yourself to be distracted. Do not fall into the depths of racial hate for anyone. Don't hate someone because of their skin color or their background, religion, sexual orientation, anything. Understand that it's we, the people, versus the system of murder and genocide, the scientific dictatorship that has in one way or another targeted us all. So we, the people, must stand together unified, regardless of our race, unified with the knowledge and awareness that we have a right to live, and we have a right to have families, and we have the right to know the truth. And until that truth is acknowledged, we cannot be free. You can break physical chains from old slave plantation days, and you can have physical freedom, but now we have a new kind of enslavement. We are all chemical slaves to the covert sterilization. We are victims of these systems. We, all of us, black and white, all of us. So spread the word, share this video, have the courage to tell the truth, and I will continue to do so as well. Because I answer to a higher power. And I know that one day I'm going to be judged for my actions, for what I said or what I didn't say, if I covered something up, which I refuse to do. We are going to be judged, and I refuse to go through this life knowing this dark secret and not sounding the alarm to those who need to know it the most. That's all that matters to me. That's why I'm doing this. So I thank you for listening and watching. I thank you for your time. Share this message far and wide, and continue to watch naturalnews.com, where I will bring you more on this topic and similar topics in the years ahead. I will continue to fight for humanity with every breath. To my last day, I will fight for humanity, and that means black people and everybody else. We are not separate. We are not at war with each other. The establishment is at war with us, regardless of our color. So, understand that truth, and thank you for your time. Take care.
And this is Not So Mad Science with your host, Brother Harold Muhammad, here on the Black Hole Radio Network, as we revisited the plot to exterminate black people. We're going to do another revisit as we head down the line of time and shows that we've done. We're going to listen to the real Thanksgiving.
Horrors of Thanksgiving and America as a white future minority coming up.
Far and away, the most massive genocide in the history of the world. The lowest life expectancy in the West. And the year the U.S. will turn native.
Virtually none of Thanksgiving has an ounce of accuracy. No, it's the bestseller, Lies My Teacher Told Me. The idea of Europe bringing civilization to the Americas simply flips truth on its head. This is what European explorers actually found in North America.
Far and away the most beautiful city on Earth. Five times the size of London or Rome. Great towers and buildings rising from the water. 60,000 gleaming houses, and how spacious and how well built they were. Of beautiful stonework and cedarwood, and the wood of other sweet scented trees. The many streets and boulevards of the city were so neat and well swept, despite the multitude of inhabitants. Crisscrossed with a complex network of canals, like an enormous Venice. But also remarkable floating gardens that reminded of nowhere else on Earth.
While Europe was drinking water from its polluted city rivers, huge aqueducts transported America's water from fresh springs.
But what impressed most were the special merchant areas where timber and tiles and other building materials were bought and sold, as well as greengrocer streets where one could buy every sort of vegetable, fruits, honeys, nut paste and chocolates. Astonished by the personal cleanliness and hygiene of the colorfully dressed populace and by their extravagant use of soaps, deodorants and breath sweeteners.
Most Europeans never bathed and kept clothes on at all times. The Pilgrim's Notes biographer Zini Finer had a terrible smell. Indians tried, quote, without success to teach them to bathe. The settlers also had bad breath from rotting teeth. Death and starvation were so common that corpses were just dumped in open pits known as poor holes. Many turned to alcohol and committed suicide. In fact, the story of the first settlers has been deliberately changed, notes author James Lowen, because the truth is so shameful. They actually settled hundreds of miles further south and stayed in America because the mission was a failure. Their real aim, reports historian Robert Beverly, was to find some gold and take it back to Europe.
They spent their days digging random holes in the ground, haplessly looking for gold instead of planting crops. Soon they were starving and digging up putrid Indian corpses to eat. They took some Indian prisoners and forced them to teach the colonists how to farm.
And the meal with the natives wasn't quite the Thanksgiving shown on TV and in school books.
The colonists offered the Indians a toast to eternal friendship, whereupon the chief, his family, advisors, and 200 followers dropped dead of poison.
In mainstream history books, perhaps the most common description of American territory then is virgin land. In fact, notes historian Peter Jennings, it was widowed. Horrific enough, the Nazi ethnic cleansings in Europe during World War II. Leading American studies professor David Stannard notes it's dwarfed by, quote, far and away the most massive act of genocide in the history of the world. The death of 100 million indigenous people in the, quote, American Holocaust, some from disease, but also vast numbers from a deliberate policy aimed at wiping out the race that mainstream history books continue to pretend never happened. He notes when Heinrich Himmler called the final solution, quote, de-lousing, Himmler was only echoing the Pilgrim Army's rallying cry, Nits make life, Nits being Indian babies. This is a map of Indian nations across the U.S. 80% of the first government's entire budget went on attacking existing Indian settlements to take their developed farmland. The settlers would most probably not have survived, writes Jennings, on their own. 95% of America's entire population was then wiped out. American Holocaust notes there is documented evidence of colonist leaders going town after town, deliberately killing all men, women, and children. Yet school texts and history books remain silent. Orders came from the very top. Under the direct order of George Washington, at least 28 of 30 Seneca towns and all the towns of the Mohawk, Onondaga, and Cayuga were simply obliterated. George Washington wrote, the Indian country, quote, must be destroyed. Thomas Jefferson called to, quote, pursue Indians to extermination. Nobel Peace Prize winner Theodore Roosevelt called beneficial the eradication of the native race. Stannard notes genocide was official public policy. California Governor Peter Burnett in his 1851 message to the legislature.
Extermination must continue to be waged until the Indian becomes extinct.
Another governor issued the public proclamation to, quote, pursue, kill, and destroy all Indians. A witness notes the ensuing bloodbath practically wiped out the native race.
The whites shoot them down like wolves, men, women, and children, wherever they could find them. This war of extermination against the Aborigines is tending to the final extinction of the race.
What reportedly saved the race from extinction was their use of slave labor.
This extermination policy has proved so injurious to the interests of the whites. Indian labor is indispensable.
Highly prized slaves were Indian girls as young as three, said the Marysville Appeal, for fulfilling double roles of labor and of lust. Phil Lane Jr. is hereditary chief of the Hanks-on-One First Nation. Phil, really great to see you. What facts are being airbrushed out of history?
Practices were that sometimes you don't want to speak about, and they not only wiped out most of the people, but the way they did it, the greatest loss of people any time in history.
Cultural genocide is still being waged on surviving Indians, reports Truthell. From the start of the 20th century, children were forced into so-called Indian boarding schools, designed to, quote, kill the Indian in them, according to the system's founding father, Richard Pratt. Indians are obliged to change their name to a Western one like Tom, made to dress and style their hair like whites. Indigenous Americans are also forced to adopt Christianity and all other parts of Western culture. The North Sea Farm witnessed the abuse firsthand. Thank you so much for speaking to us. Can you tell us what happened?
Federal policy here was to take the Indian out of the person. They beat the language out of like my father. He grew up his whole life. His hands were kind of bent. As a result, he used to talk our native language, but he never wanted me to learn. I consider myself a recovering Catholic because of, you know, the sexual abuse that I experienced, you know, from the Catholic Church.
Daniel Sheehan says the genocide is continuing. He's helped start the Lakota Child Rescue Project to stop the forcible removal of Indian children. Daniel, thanks a lot for coming on. Could you tell us what is happening to the children?
And what we discovered is that not only were the children being taken on an epidemic level, that it was happening on every single one of the reservations and in virtually every one of the major cities. The International Convention Against Genocide actually has a provision which expressly identifies what's going on as genocide, that the systematic undertaking on the part of the racially dominant culture in a given nation state, taking away indigenous children from their native tribes and putting them in the white culture, has been identified as genocide.
Even the Supreme Court still upholds Native second-class status to this day, writes noted legal scholar Robert Williams. He joins us now. It's really great to speak to you. Can you give us some examples?
One out of three Indian women will be raped during their lifetime. In 86% of those cases, the victims report that it's a non-Indian that perpetuated the sexual assault or the rape. This has been traced directly to the inability of tribes to prosecute these crimes. One of the points I make in my book, Savage Anxieties, is that if you look at the history of the more civilized nations' treatments, so-called more civilized nations' treatments of indigenous peoples, it really makes you wonder who are the savages and who are the more civilized. One very famous study done found that every single treaty that the United States had negotiated with tribes had in fact been breached at one time or another or had been violated. Supreme Court said they had no property rights and therefore no rights to just compensation. And there was some horrible language in the opinion about how the court recognized that everyone knows that the savage tribes of America were conquered and the treaties were really meaningless anyway. So the perpetuation of these stereotypes in this case, which is still valid law in the United States, it's still a valid precedent.
And so they drink it, but it's actually hairspray.
Native Indians now have the highest rate of suicide and pandemic of cancer in the Western Hemisphere. At 44, life expectancy is lower than Afghanistan and around the same as Europe at the time of the Pilgrims. For an official banquet to celebrate 350 years since Pilgrims landed, authorities invited Native Indian Frank James to speak. But when they saw his speech taken from a settler's own account of what really happened, they wouldn't let him read it.
The Pilgrims had hardly explored the shores 4 days before they robbed the graves of my ancestors and stole their corn, wheat, and beans. The Indians knew this fact, yet welcomed and befriended the settlers, little knowing that they would be killed by the settlers' guns. What has happened cannot be changed, but today we work toward a better America, a more Indian America, where people and nature are once again important.
Frank has helped start a national day of mourning each Thanksgiving, a protest over the Plymouth Harbor and Mayflower replica. On the West Coast, thousands also gather for Un-Thanksgiving Day, calling on the U.S. to honor treaties promising Indian rights and international law. The American government faces increasing domestic and international pressure. Supreme Court has reaffirmed the validity of the Treaty of Fort Laramie, giving Indians rights over the area. The United Nations, despite four countries voting against, Australia, New Zealand, Canada, and the United States, passed a resolution declaring indigenous peoples' right to self-rule. The UN is also calling for the states to return to Indian tribes their stolen land. The Mexica movement wants to bring indigenous people of America in a single nation without, it says, the artificial borders created by Europeans. Movement's director, Olintes Gatlipoca, joins us. Really great to see you. You say the demographics are on your side.
We are projected to be the majority in the states of California and Arizona, and basically the western United States. In the next 50 years, we're going to be the majority in the United States of America. For the European who's scared about all this, I'd say pull a seat over, because that's what we've been doing for 500 years. We've been scared of all of the monstrosities that Europeans have done to us. They've exterminated 95% of our population. They've stolen 100% of our land. They've left us in poverty on our own land.
Many cities throughout the U.S. are already majority indigenous. In 8 years, 8 more states are projected to be white minority. In 30 years, that will apply to the United States as a whole. The reaction of certain Americans is already causing some surprise. Seek truth from facts. This is the truth.
I'd like to say shalom, giving all praise to Yahweh Hashem Yahushua. Also give a double honor to the elders of GMS, and also give a double honor to the Akim, and shalom, and blessings to you brothers and sisters out there that listen to this word, man, and that's growing. As I showed in the clips about Thanksgiving, you know, which celebrates the murder and the slaughter of the indigenous people of this land, the Native American Indians and the Seminole Indians, okay, the tribe of Gad and Reuben, you know. And you have a lot of our people this week that's about to celebrate that nonsense, man. Like I keep saying before, now is the high time to come out of the ways of Babylon. You know, because that's, you're pretty much celebrating your oppression. Because the same thing they did to the Native American Indians is the same thing they did to you Negroes and you Hispanics. Because we all in the same boat. Because we're all a part of the 12 lost tribes of the children of Israel. And now we in the time of our uprising, where the Most High is raising us up, all 12 tribes. That's where you have that standoff over there in Standing Rock, where they want to build a pipeline on the Native American Indians' land. So Thanksgiving is an abominable holiday, okay? Which, like I said before, which I showed in the clip, which they slaughtered those Indians down in Massachusetts, and they celebrated it. And wherever they took down an Indian tribe, they had a celebration. Until Abraham Lincoln consolidated and made an official holiday in the 1800s, I believe 1863. All right, so that's what the Bible says. This, we go to these scriptures, 2 Thessalonians chapter 5, verse 20. You know, Native American Indians, all 12 tribes are going to rise, man. Gad is going to rise, and that's who you Native American Indians are. Gad, scripture says, Gad, a troop shall overcome, but he shall overcome in the end. Who was the troop? The American cavalry. Okay, all those European settlers, those colonists that took your land unjustly. But in the end, you're going to overcome them. All 12 tribes, we're going to overcome Esau. Who's Esau? The white man. Alright? That's why the scripture says Jacob's hand held Esau's heel. Because the Most High is going to use Jacob, our forefather, which Jacob represents all 12 tribes. He's going to use you in this day and time to bring this devil down, man. Right? That's what it's going to say. 2 Thessalonians chapter 5, verse 20. And the scripture is going to cut that wicked, evil holiday. The scripture gives us high holy days that we should follow. And Thanksgiving ain't a part of it. All right? That's celebrating oppression. That's celebrating evil. There we go. 1 Thessalonians 5:22, it says, abstain from all appearance of evil. So the Bible says to refrain, abstain from anything that you see that's evil or contrary to the Most High. Thanksgiving is a part of that. Okay? These holidays, it's time to forget those things, man. It's time to forsake that. That's the part of being born again. Because we wasn't taught that in school. That was set up by an enemy. Alright, Esau, man. was the most devious, untrustworthy, manipulative bastard, demonic bastard, that has ever lived, this white man. Because everything he got, he stole. Everything, man. And he cheat, and he lie, and he manipulated his way to the top, because he is the devil. And you so-called Negroes, Hispanics, and you Native Indians, you're going to see that in these last days, especially since Trump has taken office. The white man is going to show his horns, okay? And he's not going to hide his racism. You better get your act together and come back to how white I was shot. You read this, Job 14, verse 4. It says, who can bring a clean thing out of an unclean? Not one. So you can't bring something, you can't make something good that was originally intended to be evil. So you have a lot of our people that make these excuses and say, oh nah, that's just a day that we come together with our family. No. What is the source or origin of that holiday? It goes back to murder, rape, robbery, and murder. And it was the same time, 1621, that's the same time we came over here in slavery in 1620. You see? But that's why the scripture says our people are destroyed for lack of knowledge. So why they simultaneously took down the Indians, they put us in captivity. Slavery, man. So that's what you're doing. You're celebrating your oppression. I'm going to read a couple of more scriptures. It won't be that long. Amos chapter 5, verse 23. We're living in some good times, man. We're living in some times where Yahweh Shai is going to come back, and you're going to call Jesus Christ, and he's going to redeem his people, the elect of his people.
A think tank in the UK.
The Depo Provera that our government targeted you and I with actually induces, chemically induces homosexuality in men. Do you follow? Now, many drugs, they say, besides these antiandrogens such as Depo-Provera, many drugs, such drugs appear to at least partially divert or block masculinization of the nervous system during neural organization. Many drugs besides these have a partial demasculizing effect. The list includes barbiturates, which are drugs, yada yada, yada yada, yada yada, marijuana. Your weed family is subtly, partially feminizing you. We have documented. See how quiet it is? See how quiet it is? What? What? You want to get up and walk out on me like the LGBT walked out on the Honorable Mr. Louis Farrakhan in Long Beach? That's what you want to do? Okay. Okay. We have documented that the enhanced weed. Now look, in this confession, marijuana is identified by the conspirators as an anti-androgen drug that assaults, that blocks the development of masculinity. We have documented that the weed that hit the streets in the late 60s came through CIA laboratories and passed first through the hands of CIA assets before you were ever able to light it up yourself. We have also documented that not only does this now popular government touch weed with its increased THC content, not only does it diminish executive cognitive function, yeah, bruh, you pretty functional when you lift it. That is true. You can go to work, and if the job ain't too complex, you can do a reasonably good job
at it. We don't mess with nigger stuff. We, the THC, diminishes what they call executive cognitive function. That higher level thinking, that black God thinking. We have documented that not only does it poison your sperm, and I'm going to mention why it's quiet over there. We have documented that not only does it poison your sperm, but it also mildly feminizes you. We're going to look at some of the manifestations of the mild feminization. But we also documented that since 1975, the U.S. government has made imported and domestically grown marijuana effectively an ethnic weapon against black people by contaminating much, if not most, if not all, of weed plants with a dangerous pesticide called paraquat. Paraquat has what's called a melanin affinity. That means the toxic chemical binds to melanated tissue, and it attaches and stays in melanated bodies for life, releasing poisons into the body. Weed has been weaponized, ethnically weaponized against black people. Yet, weed smoking is the religion of black folks 45 and under, including those of us in here. Weed smoking has become a religion in the hood, in the black community. And bruh, you got your weed religion from the same person you got Christianity from.
Again, in this short video, we're going to look at that by asking the question, well, what is pain? It used to be the case that we were very clear about what pain was, that there was a chap called Descartes who had the idea that if we burnt our foot, for instance, in this situation, then what would happen is it would create a sensation in our foot, which would then travel up effectively a single wire to our brain, which would and ring a bell in our brain, which would say whether something tells us that we were doing ourselves some damage, and would encourage us to then remove our foot from the fire. And for many years, that was the way we thought about the pain. And it wasn't until the beginning of the 20th century that people really started to question whether this was actually the correct way of thinking about things. What they started to do was they started to notice some problems with the single wire theory. So, for instance, the single wire theory would suggest that if you have a large amount of pain, then you have a large amount of damage and vice versa. However, when they started looking at soldiers, for instance, who were injured on battlefields, what they started noticing was that in certain circumstances, people could have the most horrific injuries and not experience a lot of pain. And equally, on a much more mundane level, they also started realizing that people could have a very small amount of injury and yet have quite a large amount of pain. And you may have experienced this yourself last time you had a paper cut. It's a very small injury, but God, it can really hurt. So we started thinking, well, hold on, there's something not quite right here. Another thing that people were starting to notice as well was something called phantom limb pain. And this is where someone experiences pain in a limb that has been amputated. And again, you think, well, with a single wire theory, well, if the wire's not there and the limb's not there, then there's obviously nothing to generate that sensation. So the question then is, well, you know, what's going on there? And you may have experienced something similar to phantom limb pain yourself when you go to see your dentist and they inject something in your gum, and you start to feel the pain gets very, very numbed. But actually, you can actually experience quite a different sensation. So what actually happens is that it feels as though your face is twice the size it normally would be. And so we start to realize that actually even on a almost sort of on a regular basis, we can start experiencing symptoms and things that aren't based on what actually is happening with our bodies. And this obviously gave people a lot of cause to stop and think. Another thing that's quite interesting is the concept of referred pain. And this is where people experience pain in a part of the body which is different from where the actual problem is. Quite a common example would be when people have problems with their heart, having a heart attack, often they will feel pain in their jaw or their arm or shoulder rather than actually where the heart is. And this is known as referred pain. Another example would be sciatica, where people experience pain down the back of their leg, when in reality the pain, the problem is in the back, bottom of the back. So again, this doesn't quite fit with this single wire theory, and so people are starting to sort of question whether actually there might be a bit more going on than was actually thought about. And then finally, it looks at thing. There's a issue where some people actually are unable to feel any pain at all, either called chronic insensitivity pain or congenital anesthesia. And in this situation, something happens to the genetic structure, which results in the person not being able to actually experience pain. And if you're a pain sufferer yourself, you might think that's actually a pretty good thing. However, unfortunately, people with this condition have actually a much shorter life expectancy, because as a result of not experiencing pain, they're much more likely to damage themselves. And if they have something going on inside their body, such as a broken bone or something like appendicitis, then unfortunately they aren't aware of it until it's often too late and they've caused themselves some horrible damage. The other thing about this is that we start looking at things like X-rays, so we've got an X-ray on the screen, and you might think that as a professional you can look at that X-ray and say whether that person has got pain or not, but actually we can't. Often it's no better than chance to be able to look at an X-ray and see whether someone's got pain, because having it changes on an X-ray that for one person might cause pain does not necessarily mean that someone else with exactly the same changes will experience the same thing. And so we start to realise that actually there's a very, very poor correlation between what's going on in our body and the pain we experience. And that started getting encouraging people to really think about the way, the process of those sensations getting up to the brain. And people started really thinking that actually there must be something a bit more to it. So when we say now, what is pain? It's not this single wire theory that we're actually working on anymore. And in a future video, I'll talk to you about something called the gate control theory of pain, and look at actually some of the things that we now know that mediate that message going from the foot or any other or else in the body to the brain. And now the current idea that we have of pain is much more about tissue damage, obviously, is part of it, but also the way we behave, the way we communicate our pain, the way that other people around us respond to us when we're in pain, and a whole series of other issues besides. So the International Association for the Study of Pain published a definition of pain, and this is it. Pain is an unpleasant sensory and emotional experience associated with actual or potential tissue damage, or described in such terms. And if we go through that in a bit more detail, we can see that actually there's quite a lot that's going on rather than just a single wire. For a start, it says that pain has got to be an unpleasant sensory experience. Now, there is some debate about whether that actually is the case, because for some people, in some situations, the something that is a noxious stimulus can actually be regarded as pleasant. But that's for another day. The other aspect of that is a sensory experience, so it's very much involves the nerves and the nervous system in the human body, but it's also an emotional experience. And it's so often people sort of say, well, it's all in your mind, or it's a real pain. In reality, there isn't such a thing as something that's all in the mind or all in the body. Because the brain and the nervous system are all one and the same sort of system, the two things intermingle and they certainly have a major impact on each other. In fact, when we look at what happens in the brain when people experience pain, and this is a study from 2005, the areas that you can see on the screen which are coloured in are all the different areas that light up when someone experiences pain or describes that they're in pain. And so we can see that actually there isn't such a thing as a single pain centre in our brain. Rather, that what actually is going on is we have a pain matrix in our brain, and a matrix of things which interact with each other and influence the way we perceive the world around us, and particularly the pain. And the other thing that's important to bear in mind here is that this isn't just a one-way process, because actually what's going on in our brains also feeds back down through the various different aspects of the pain system and can have an impact on actually the way that those sensations are processed on their way through the nervous system. More of that in another video. So we then move on to thinking, hey, well, so we know it's an unpleasant sensory and emotional experience. We know it's affecting all sorts of different parts of our brain, and certainly some of those parts of our brain that were lighting up when we see the pain under an MRI scanner, say actually that we're the actual emotional centres of our brain we're being lit up. So it's associated with actual or potential tissue damage. Actual tissue damage, yes, okay, whether we stub our toe or cut our finger, that's fine, that causes pain. But potential tissue damage? Well, actually, if there's growing sort of evidence that people do experience pain either before tissue damage or if they think tissue damage has occurred. So, for instance, when someone is going to stick a needle in your arm, often you'll experience pain before the needle actually breaks the skin. Perhaps another mundane issue is if you're getting out of a chair and you're expecting your knees to hurt when you do so, then actually they're much more likely to experience pain, even if you have exactly the same pathology as someone who doesn't. Because we believe or we expect pain to occur. And this is another example of how this works in terms of an experiment using a PET scanner, which shows electrical activity in the brain. Now, we've got three brains. On the left-hand side, you've got a brain which is someone's holding a high thermal lance, in other words, a hot rod. And you can see that a large bit of their brain lights up. And then in the middle, there's someone holding a low thermal lance, or a slightly cooler rod, basically. And you can see that it's a smaller area that lights up. And then you come to the third brain, the one on the right-hand side, and ask the question, well, okay, so what do we think is going on there? It's a large bit of the brain that's lit up there, so therefore it must be a high thermal lance. Well, as you can probably gather from what we're talking about, that isn't actually the case. In this situation, what actually is happening is that someone is holding a low thermal lance, but they were told they were going to be holding a high thermal lance. In other words, the brain is responding to what it expects rather than what is actually happening in that situation. And this whole idea of expectation and perception of what's going on is also has a major part to play, because actually often people describe their pain not by actually what's actually happening, but actually in terms of potential tissue damage. So, for instance, people often refer to pain as being a stabbing pain or a ripping pain or a burning pain. And certainly, if there's some evidence that if the more evocative the description is that you use to explain the pain, and particularly if you're describing it in a very damaging or a very threatening way, then you're much more likely to experience higher levels of pain than if you perhaps talk it down or just use nice straightforward terminology to describe what's going on in your body. So this is a chap called John Bonica, who's one of the famous sort of scientists studying pain, and he says that pain is no longer considered exclusively either as a neuropsychophysiological or a psychological phenomenon. Such a rigid dichotomy is obsolete, because pain is now recognized as the compound result of physiopsychological processes whose complexity is almost beyond comprehension. Wow. So, yeah, what we're dealing with here is something that's complicated, and it certainly shouldn't be reduced to being something that's just about, a cut finger or a broken bone, or indeed something that's all in the mind. And what's particularly interesting about this quote is that it's not something that's just come up. This is a quote that comes from a book that John Bonica wrote in 1953. So this is something we've known about for a while, and yet we are still learning every year new and interesting things about the way that the pain system and the human body works. And one of the things we're learning time and time again is that actually it's even more complicated than we thought, even in 1953.
And this is Not So Mad Science here on the Black Hole Radio Network. As we come to a close of this edition of Not So Mad Science with your host, Brother Harold Muhammad, we bid you good evening, hoping that you had a great and wonderful day, and prayerfully pray to Allah that we will be with you once again next week to share with you the sciences so that the common man can understand. To that end, assalamu alaikum. Keep the faith, baby.